Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to The Beautiful Struggle, episode 4. Is that the official how do you say it in Spanish?
I don't speak Spanish.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, the voice that you just heard that told you that he can't speak Spanish, it's Adam Smith.
And hola.
What happened?
I said hola.
Oh, okay, you got a little bit in
of Spanish.
There's a little bit in there. And I have him on the show, as always, to tell his origin story. I personally brought him on because I'm a big fan of his artwork. He's an illustrator. I think street artist is fair.
I wouldn't go there, but I'll take it.
You don't want the people to come looking for you?
Mm-mm.
Okay.
No, because I think that I don't fall into street art. I don't want to insult street art by lumping myself into
All right, well,
category.
Let me shut up. Let me just let Adam tell you about himself. So I have him on the show, honestly, because I'm a really, really, really big fan of his artwork. It's artwork that I can tell it's him from just looking at it. There's a few artists out there where I can see their art just out and about and not see their name next to it, not see their like signature and go, oh, that's Adam Smith. And I think he has a very distinct style, a very, very awesome way of doing stuff, and I'm a big fan of it. So I wanted to have him on to tell his origin story. So Adam, why don't you tell the people a little bit about what you do from your perspective? How do you roll?
Oh man, how do I roll? Like a burrito?
There it is.
I don't know. Sorry. Yeah. Well, thank you for those kind words. You've told me that before, that you can recognize my style out and about without my name on it. And I take that as a huge compliment. Because that's something that all my favorite artists, it's the same way.
Mm-hmm.
If I see one of their pieces, I know it's them, you know, without seeing their name.
I actually knew you by your art before I ever met you.
No, oh, really?
Yeah, so I would see your art around Philly.
Yeah.
So I'd see it here, I'd see it there, I'd see it on a poster, I'd see it on a billboard, and I just started recognizing it over and over and over.
Do you remember any of the early pieces you saw?
I don't remember a specific piece. I just remember the style. I remember the hands you draw, the way you draw hands, and the way in your characters over and over. But I think it's specifically the way you draw hands is one of the things that made me go, huh. And then when I actually met you and put your name, I was like, oh, yeah, I've seen your stuff. I think I specifically saw it at Honey's Sit and Eat. There's something on the billboard there that I saw.
At Honey's?
Yeah. Something you had done.
I can't remember. I don't know if I ever did anything for our Honey's, but yeah, thank you. I love to draw hands. I'm glad that you like them.
There we go.
Yeah, you know, I like to make my hands a little pudgy.
Yeah, they're
a little bit cartoony.
Yeah, they're sausage fingers.
They are sausage. They're like almost like an inflated latex glove.
That's exactly right.
Yeah, yeah.
That's exactly right.
Thanks, man. Well, thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So not a street artist. What are you?
You know, I dabbled in street art a little bit, but really not enough to consider myself a street artist.
You haven't spent enough time there to really say that you've done it.
Yeah. And I've never really put anything on the street in the sense of street art being like guerrilla style, non-commissioned public artwork. I've never really been into that. I never wrote graffiti. I never was a wheat paster.
Mm-hmm.
Although I do really admire those things. But yeah, I mean, I would say primarily I'm an illustrator.
Yeah.
Secondary would be a graphic designer.
Mm-hmm.
Tertiary would be...
Oh, the word of the day, ladies and gentlemen, is tertiary. Spanish speaker. Google tertiary, because I don't know what it means. I'm not going to sit here in front like I do know. But yeah.
I could be wrong. But we should Google it. No.
Yeah.
What am I, thirdly or tertiarily? I suppose art direction for Scouts Honor Media.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's the company that I co-own and run and co-founded with Josh S.O. Wan.
Hopefully we'll have him on here.
Yeah.
Try to twist his arm.
You're going to have to really pull him in here. He'll do it.
We got one half, so.
He'll do it.
We got to get the other half in here eventually.
Yeah. Yeah, but me and Joshua Wan, a.k.a. Josh, a.k.a. S.O., a.k.a. Daddy Poppy Wan.
There we go. I didn't know he had Poppy Wan one, but...
Poppy, I think S.O. the kid calls him Poppy Wan.
Okay, all right.
Or Papa Wan, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, Scouts Honor Media Company is me and Josh, and now we have Jasmine, who is she sort of serves as studio manager for us.
Right.
She's killing it. taken a lot off our plate as far as, you know, producing projects and communicating with clients and scheduling stuff. And yeah, she's been great. And yeah, we have our studios are down near Chinatown, 11th and Vine. Stop on by for a visit sometime if you want.
Or spend some money.
You can spend money too. Yeah, we have mugs you could buy.
We do take your money if you want to give it to us.
Yeah, you could give us money even without a product in return.
There's that option as well. That might not go over as well.
I think that's a donation. We take donations.
Okay.
Yeah.
What you might have seen, Adam. Well, not what you might have seen. Adam has done some work for Bear Fruit. The Believe, Create, Inspire pattern that we are using on our iPhone case. That we've used on some of our products in the past and we will be continuing to use in the future is kind of like our, you know, like you may see like Louis Vuitton has this all over pattern that they use on luggage and this and that. I thought that that was dope and I always wanted to have something like that for Bear Fruit. So I approached Adam and asked him to hook that up. So yeah, that's some of the stuff that he's done for us. And the Believe, Create, Inspire video, Adam was part of the direction for putting that together as well. I remember you and I sat down, talked through like the voiceover piece.
Yeah.
I came in with this half-baked freestyle version of what I wanted to say, and we sat down and kind of put together like a more organized way of putting my thoughts out there.
Yeah. We sort of helped co-rewrite the dialogue, or not the dialogue, the voiceover.
Yeah.
Or your narration.
Mm-hmm.
Josh and I, yeah, we helped co-write it, sort of took what you had, figured out how to rephrase things so that it's more understandable. And yeah, I mean, that's just a little nugget of what we do over at Scouts Honor.
Word.
Little tiny bit of writing. Neither of us are great writers. Josh can write pretty well. I can write pretty well. But yeah, actually subcontracting a writer is something we played around with, or mm-hmm. we are considering playing around with,
mm-hmm.
Especially when it comes to music videos. Just if it's like going to be a story-based music video, why not bring in a writer to help us develop a good story?
Right.
Rather than trying to, you know, sort of cook up a story ourselves, it's really not that great.
Yeah. It's important to know what you're good at and what you're not good at.
For sure.
And it takes a lot to actually be able to say, you know what, I'm probably not the best person in the room at this.
Definitely.
So I would assume you are at a point now where you kind of know what your strengths and weaknesses are, but you weren't always like that.
Yeah. I do certainly try to work within my skill set.
Mm-hmm.
And I, you know, humble brag, I do have a pretty wide variety of skills,
mm-hmm.
but it's sort of like master of none, whatever. What's that phrase?
It's like
jack of all trades, master of none.
Yeah, that's something like that. We're definitely butchering this.
Just Google that later.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm.
So why don't we do this before we get in too much further into where you're at now? Let's go back to the beginning. Same question I asked everybody. It's like, so to speak, what planet are you from? Where are you from? Where did you start? Where's the beginning? Take us back there, because imagine we don't know anything about you. Just kind of take us back to the beginning.
All right. You don't know anything about me. Okay. I was born in Pennsylvania.
Okay.
I was raised in Pennsylvania. I basically lived in Pennsylvania my whole life except for college and a couple extra years around college.
Now, Pennsylvania's big.
It is big, yeah. I was born in Worcester, Pennsylvania, which is next door to Lansdale. That would be somewhere that more people would know of.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, it was the suburbs, but my parents had a little bit of land. My best friends down the road.
So your parents own land?
Yeah. My parents live on 10 acres.
And
they live next to my grandparents who have 20 acres. And then my best friends that I grew up down the street with, their family owned a dairy farm. So they had like over 100 acres. So it was, we were in the suburbs, but where I grew up, I thought it was the country.
Yeah, I was going to say, that doesn't sound like a suburb to me. Suburb is like northeast.
Yeah.
Or like Roxboro, maybe. Like, you sound like you live on a prairie. Like, it's a straight up farm.
Yeah, no. It was a farm.
Cows and stuff.
Yeah, horses and cows. No horses at our place. My grandfather did raise beef cattle after he retired, just as a hobby. But yeah, my first jobs were working at the dairy farm down the street, my friend's family's farm. My first jobs were milking cows and tending to the small animals on the farm. So, you know, I would like feed and clean up after the calves, goats, llamas, chickens, all those little animals. I was, you know, that was one of my first jobs.
All things I never knew until just this moment. Never knew.
Isn't that what the beautiful struggle
is all
about?
That's the whole thing. Yeah, you're right. We're supposed to go back and find out what's going on. Yeah. I didn't know any of this stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. My first job was picking corn at that farm when I was like 14.
Now, when you say job, it's kind of like, what does job mean? Because some people's family, it's just like, this is what you do. It's not a job. Like, everyone does things. It's like chores, no big deal. So I've never lived in that type of environment. So were you getting paid, like you got up and went to work?
Yeah.
Or was it just like, everybody's got a job and this is yours?
That was, I was employed.
Okay. Child labor.
Yeah, I think the rules are a little different on a farm. I think you can start working younger.
Okay.
I don't know, though.
I could be dead wrong.
I'm not going to tell you who the family is, so you can't go after them.
Fair enough.
But it was a job. It was the summer in between, I would say, 7th and 8th grade, maybe. And me and my buddy, whose father was the head farmer on the farm, we would get up to the farm at like 5:30 a.m. and pick corn till it started to get hot, which was like, you know, 9
a.m.?
A.m. And then we would
take hours of work before it.
Yeah, I mean, and I'm not going to try and act like I'm some tough dude, but it's hard work. And,
well, I bet it is.
Yeah.
First of all, getting up that early in the morning is hard work alone, let alone doing manual labor afterwards.
I can't get up that early anymore.
You might be worthy of a little bit of bragging.
Okay. It was pretty cool.
Like, I'll take it.
You know, it was pretty tough.
Right.
No. But yeah, I mean, that was my first work experience.
Mm-hmm.
And then that same farm, actually, they run a public dairy store. So they have like homemade ice cream and you can buy their milk and things like that. I retired from farm labor.
And you retired?
Moved into the cushy retail setting of the dairy store.
Okay.
Yeah.
How is that transition? First of all, let me back up. Were you enjoying the job or was it like,
outside,
let me get this
like
money?
The farm work?
Yeah.
Yeah, I liked it.
So you had that was fun. You were like, man, this is exciting. I'm ready to go.
Exciting is a little bit generous.
It's a bit much. Okay. All right.
But yeah, it was, you know, it was cool. It was fun to do that kind of stuff when you're a young teenager because, you know, we were always just getting dirty anyway, being outside. And so the fact that I could do that, you know, I could be dirty and work outside and get paid for it, that was cool.
So it's kind of like I would 14. Do this anyway, no big deal.
Yeah. Well, I would be outside. We would be outside,
you'd be outside
getting dirty
around
anyway. We would be like driving go-karts and stuff and not working.
Gotcha.
But yeah, then we got jobs there and started making money and, you know, I've been all about the paper ever since, as they say.
There it is. So now how did you get the mind about you to get a job at such a young age? Because there's a lot of people at, you know, their 20s, in college, they don't have jobs, never had a job, let alone a job where you got to wake up that early and do manual labor. So where did that kind of work ethic come from?
That's a very good question. And I honestly, I don't really remember what spurred me on to get that job. I think it was probably a thing where me and my buddies were like sitting around in the summer with nothing to do and our parents strongly encouraged us to get a job, you know? And it was the perfect opportunity because my buddy's family owned the farm. And so we didn't have to apply. They just said, yeah, come on and pick corn and we'll pay.
Right.
I'm sure that my parents had a lot to do with me starting that. Cause both of my parents work hard. My dad is a furniture maker.
Oh.
He built the house I grew up in 1985. Built it from the ground up, just him and some friends.
Wow.
And he built his wood shop, which is about 150 yards from the house. So his daily commute is like just a walk out to the barn.
That must be nice.
Yeah. He's kind of spoiled and he takes it for granted.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, he's out there in the shop like at least 6 days a week. usually 7 days a week. I don't think my mom sees him too much because he's always out there.
Yeah.
But he works hard, and I think I got that from him. He really pushed that on me to work hard. And I think more than just working hard is keeping your head down and working hard.
Tell me more about that, exactly about what does putting your head down mean to you?
Sort of play in the background, as Andy Mineo would say.
Right.
Basically, keeping your head down to me would be getting your work done and not making anything of it. Like, you have a job to do, you should just get it done and not, you don't need to tell anybody you did it. Just do it because it's your job.
Right.
And, you know, there's no, the other thing is like, don't talk about how hard you're working, which I have sort of been doing right now.
You're talking about it because I'm asking about it.
Yeah, sure.
Because I'm interested in it.
But yeah, I think just doing the work, not expecting to be praised for doing the work, because the work has to be done anyway. You know, you have an obligation to get it done. So just do it. Like, keep your head down. It's not a big deal. Don't look for praise for finishing what you are assigned to finish, basically. So that's something else, something I got from him. I worked for him in his wood shop, you know, all growing up. I basically was raised in the wood shop. When they started the business a few years before I was born, my mom worked with him because they met in college in a furniture design program at RIT.
And did your dad go to school for furniture making?
He did, yeah.
Like, he knew from a young age, he's like, you know, I'm about to make this furniture.
He has literally been making furniture since he was in his young teens. And he got an apprenticeship with another local cabinet maker where he grew up. By the way, he grew up, my grandparents and my parents' properties are next door to each other. So, he grew up next door and then moved, got this land next to where he grew up. And
I'm
going to
build a house. So this is kind of like, was his father very similar? Like, work hard, put your head down, and do it because it's the right thing to do?
Yeah, I think so.
So it's like a generational thing that's been passed down throughout your family.
Yeah.
Like a heritage almost.
Yeah. My grandfather was retired before I really had any memory. I don't have any memories of my grandfather working. Because he was retired before I can remember those things. Like I mentioned before, he was raising cattle as a hobby, and he was always out there, you know, either tending to the pasture that they were in, or cleaning up after them, or feeding them, or whatever needed to be done, mending fences. You know, he was always taking care of that stuff.
Grandpa sounded like he worked hard.
He did, yeah.
Did he have any artistic, abilities, or was it all
a little bit
just like
he picked up pewter working for a little while as a hobby?
Pewter, that's like a form of
wood. Pewter is a metal.
I don't know what I'm talking about. Pewter is a form of metal. Okay.
Pewter is a soft metal, and you can cold work it, so that means you can form it without heating it. And he would make like napkin rings and what else, little like cast pewter lapel pins and things. That was a sort of a side hobby of, you know, apart from his cattle.
Selling them, or was he just making them for the fun of it?
I think he sold some occasionally. Like, he tried to do some little craft shows, but it was mostly just for fun. But my grandmother makes Frochters, which is a Pennsylvania Dutch.
I'm going to act like I know what that is.
Frochters are a form of Pennsylvania Dutch art, and they're usually created to commemorate a big milestone in someone's life. So, like, for example, she made one for me and my wife Hallie when we got married, and so it's beautiful, like very folksy looking, simple graphic designs, solid bold colors, but then handwritten calligraphy that will say, you know, the date you got married, your names, your birthdays, and like your parents. So it's this sort of keepsake thing that is a traditional Pennsylvania Dutch folk art. Yeah.
So it's part of the, seems like everybody in the family's got a little bit of artistic bone in their body.
Yeah, for sure. My sister, she's a mother now, but she was a weaver for a while. She actually had this huge loom set up in their house. Mm. And so she was making rugs. And then she and her husband
all
had,
handmade
had kids.
Stuff, it seems like.
Yeah.
It's like working with your hands is part of the thing. It's part of what you guys do.
Yeah, the craft industry, or industry, the craft
arts
are, is like how I came up. I, you know, my dad basically supported us by doing craft shows. He would do, I don't know, seven, eight, nine craft shows a year. So I like grew up going to craft shows. He would, you know, this is like convention center type of thing, like a trade show type of thing. So craft artists would have their booths.
So like Comic-Con for...
Yeah, for crafts.
For crafts.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah.
Got to take it somewhere where I understand.
Exactly. Yeah, we can take it back to comics.
Right.
But yeah, he, you know, I was raised going to craft shows. He would usually like, not usually, but occasionally, if his booth configuration was right, he could set up like a little thing behind a curtain to where me and my sister and our little friends could like hide in his booth. Huh. So we would be there, but we could do our own little thing.
Like, what were you guys doing behind the curtain?
I think one year I remember we were making little tiny paper mache cranes. And we were trying to sell them to all the craft show visitors. I don't think we sold it. We might have sold one.
They were probably like, here's a dollar.
Yeah, yeah.
Sure. Look at you cute kids.
Good job. Want one of those cranes, but here's a dollar. Yeah. And I actually, my degree from college is in the crafts. I studied metals and jewelry in college. Mm-hmm. And I did 2 or 3 years out of school. I was still making jewelry and sculpture. I had originally gone to college to study animation because I was like all through high school I drew, and I sort of had a cartoony style in high school. And so I think maybe my art teacher recommended I could study animation.
So where was the, so following the story, you know, you're working with your hands, kind of passed down heritage, mom, what does mom do?
She runs my dad's business.
Oh, okay.
Basically. Okay. Yeah, yeah.
So we got dad, we got sister, we got grandpa. Yeah. You know, like the whole family's doing working with their hands.
Mm-hmm.
And how do you start getting into the drawing? Like, where does that come from? Where's the inspiration from that?
So that came a couple years after I graduated college. I graduated from SCAD.
Wait, well, you said you were drawing when you were younger and your teacher recommended.
Mm-hmm. So I sort of had this long hiatus where I wasn't drawing for years.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I graduated high school in 01, graduated college in 05 with a degree in metals and jewelry. Mm-hmm. And at that time, I was not drawing at all except for rough sketches to develop my jewelry and sculpture work.
Right.
And I, like, started just realizing that I was doing the wrong thing, that I wasn't fully enjoying what I was doing with jewelry and sculpture.
Now, I don't like now that statement right there is something I don't want to jump past, because the whole idea of I'm doing something and I'm even kind of good at it, or I've invested a lot of time in this, but I don't really feel like this is the right thing. Can you tell me more about what that's what exactly that was?
Yeah, I mean, that basically came about where I realized all of the artists that I loved were painters or illustrators. And that I was like, what the heck am I doing making this jewelry and sculpture if the art that I like is two-dimensional drawn or painted artwork? And so I slowly started selling my metalworking equipment, all my tools and everything, and began teaching myself how to draw again. Because, you know, it had been a while.
Now, was there a particular piece that you saw? Was it like a turning point? Did something happen? Mm. Someone say something to you? You heard a song and the clouds opened?
I don't think there was any one particular instance I can think of. It was more just like a mass amalgamation collection of little realizations. Like, you know, I'd be working and realize I'm not really that happy right now doing what I'm doing.
Mm.
And then realizing, oh, wait a minute, all of the artwork that I like is illustration. So what am I, and I'm pretty good at drawing, so why am I doing this work that I don't really enjoy that much? And why don't I start drawing instead? Because that's the artwork I like and I enjoy drawing.
Yeah.
And And so, you know, I ditched the jewelry and I ditched the sculpture.
Was that hard?
It was hard. It felt like a big step backwards.
Yeah. Because
it was like, you know, probably 2 or 3 years after I graduated college, and I had begun to develop a little bit of a reputation for the work I was making. Mm. And so it felt like I, you know, almost wasted those years working on that stuff. And then I backtracked and basically started over learning a new thing.
Yeah, I'm sure there's a lot of people who are listening who have felt or do feel like they're in this kind of like crossroads.
Mm-hmm.
I know there's a lot of people who are living the life that they feel like they should be living. Like they're going out there and they're going, look, this is what I want to do. And then there's another group of people who are like, I'm doing what I feel like I'm supposed to do, or I'm doing what people told me to do, or I have this passion that I'm not particularly investing in or like nurturing or developing because, well, I've already spent so much time. Like you even hear people in their relationships who are like, yo, you're in a really bad relationship. This is abusive. And it's like, well, I've spent so much time here. I might as well, you know, this whole idea of like, there's nothing else out there for me. Like, I can't start over.
Mm-hmm.
Like I'm stuck.
Mm-hmm.
But you didn't feel that way.
You can start over. Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. You can absolutely start over.
What age was this?
Let's see. I'm 31 now. That was, you know, I was probably 26, 27 when I started making that transition.
So you were not a young
I wasn't young, no. Yeah. Oh, I mean, you know, relatively speaking,
well, I mean,
very young. But yeah, you know, that was like, it was a pretty big deal because a lot of people at that age have already fallen into a career.
Right.
That they're on track to stick with.
And you spent money on college for it.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Well, I have to thank my parents for that. They were
or somebody spent money on college for it.
Yeah, yeah. And that was definitely a struggle in my mind. Like, you know, did I waste this college education?
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think I did in the least. I definitely wouldn't change it. But yeah, if you are not happy in the career that you're in right now or the mm-hmm. career path that you're on, it's not too late to jump ship and change direction.
Mm.
You can absolutely change what you're doing. And I would encourage people to do that. If they're unhappy in what they're doing, you're not going to get happier. So leave it. Just leave it.
Now, do you feel like there is a point of no return?
When you're dead.
So at you know, even down to like, you know, you're in your 30s, 40s, 50s, why not kind of mentality?
Sure, why not? I mean, the thing is like we're almost the same age,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'm 32.
Our parents' generation, it was like you go to high school.
Yes.
Then you either go to war or you go to college.
Yeah.
And then you leave those institutions and then you get married and you get a job and that's, you're done.
Yeah.
Like that's
until,
the rest of your
until,
life.
Until the end.
Right.
Right.
That is not true anymore. Like the world is a completely different place. People change careers all the time. And so if anybody, especially like older people are telling you that you need to pick a career and stick with it, that's not true. That's like an old mentality. It's completely obsolete now. People change what they're doing all the time.
Mm.
So yeah, do what you want to do.
Now, is there a level in your mind of, because I mean, I think about this documentary called Jiro, Dreams of Sushi. You ever seen that on Netflix?
I have seen it appear on Netflix, but I have not watched it yet.
Well, it's basically this documentary of this guy named Jiro, or I don't know if I'm pronouncing it right, whatever. And he does this amazing sushi, you know, restaurant, one of the highest rated restaurants around and all this kind of thing. And you see this dedication to his craft, to his art.
Mm-hmm.
And he talks about how, I could be wrong, but I think it's on Netflix, you can watch the documentary. An intern takes 10 years. He tells people, like, if you're going to do this, if you're going to intern here with the hopes of being a part of what we do, you need to think about dedicating the next 10 years of your life to what you're doing.
or don't even really like,
don't bother,
because that's the amount of dedication that it's going to take for you to get to the level of excellence that we're expecting here.
Sure.
You know, and I think about that a lot, just thinking about like,
that's crazy.
In what sense? What do you mean?
Well, that is crazy. In if somebody's able to commit to that, I admire them highly, because that's the type of thing, like, I don't think I could ever commit to something like that. But also, if I back, you know, I need to backtrack a little bit and say that what I was saying about leaving your career, that doesn't necessarily apply to everyone. You know, there are lots of people out there who are lucky, and I emphasize the word lucky, lucky enough to find their dream job early on in life.
But that's few and far between.
Very, very few and rare.
Yes.
And my dad is one of those people. He figured out when he was a young teenager that he wanted to make furniture.
Mm-hmm.
He started learning how to make furniture when he was like 14 or 15, and he's been doing it since. He'll probably work until he drops dead in his shop.
Right.
And that, like, that's
rare.
And
enjoy every minute of it.
And he'll enjoy every minute of it. And I didn't realize, growing up, I didn't realize how rare that was. I always sort of took that for granted. Because
it is very rare.
It's very rare. And I, you know, my friends at the dairy farm, their dad, you know, he was a farmer growing up, and he's still a farmer today, and he'll probably drop dead on the farm as well.
Mm-hmm.
And so my dad and my best friend's dad, those were like the two grown men that I was most familiar with. And so I thought that was normal.
You thought,
so
like, everybody just had this trade.
Yeah.
They had these skills.
Yeah.
They had a great time doing it.
Uh-huh.
And it's like, this is life, and you make a living doing something you enjoy.
Yeah. And you're happy every day. And you, yeah. Dude, it's not, it's
little
so unusual.
Know.
Yeah. Yeah.
That is not the case for a large majority of people.
But it sounds like this guy Jiro is like that. You know?
Yeah. He's not like, from what I gather, I don't know the dude, but from what I gather, he doesn't seem like he's like, ugh, I hate this.
Make a sushi every day.
Yeah, you gotta make
this Japanese accent.
I don't have it. All my Japanese voices would be just like me doing anime.
Very offensive.
Very offensive anime impersonations. But yeah, I mean, it's just like, he's talking about how much he enjoys it. So mm-hmm. I guess what I'm gathering, if I like can kind of redirect what I'm hearing you say, well, not redirect, but like re-say back to what I'm hearing you say, is like, if you feel like there's something that you're passionate, skilled, able, and you have an opportunity to do,
mm-hmm.
like if the doors are open, if the stars are aligning, mm-hmm. and you have, like, because skill is important.
Mm-hmm.
You got to be skilled.
For sure.
You have to have a level of fulfillment, mm-hmm. and there has to be an opportunity. Mm-hmm. I think you have to be able to be adding value or offering someone something that they want.
Mm-hmm.
So it's one thing to be, I'm really passionate about singing, but I can't hold a note.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, well, I don't think Adam is saying, leave your job.
No, that's a hobby.
You know what I mean? Put that song up on SoundCloud and quit your job.
Yeah, that's a really good point about the skill thing.
Mm-hmm.
I do think that's like the most important thing.
Right.
Your skill level in a particular chosen field is absolutely critical. First of all, to your success, but also your happiness.
Yeah.
I think, because if you're like schmutzing around and making crappy artwork, for example, if you're an artist,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That's not going to be fulfilling. I think it becomes frustrating and you get discouraged based on lack of sales or lack of appreciation of the work,
right.
or of comparison to other artists who you admire. Or,
yeah.
You know, the list can go on. But anyway,
yeah. huge. Like, I've found that you tend to be good at things you like doing, mm-hmm. and you tend to like doing mm-hmm. things that you're good at.
Mm-hmm.
And you tend to like doing things that get you recognition,
mm-hmm.
you know? So it's all like this big circle. Yeah. Like, you know, you get affirmation. I do this. People tell me I kill it.
Mm-hmm.
I want to do that more, you know?
It's the Instagram effect.
Right. I do
it
more.
Need those likes. Dude.
I got 200, 300 likes on that joint.
You getting 200 likes?
Nah.
Dang.
No, I'm not getting 200 likes. Am I? I don't even know. But I agree. Like, you want affirmation. You want your community to big you up and go, yeah, that's good.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Most definitely.
Mm-hmm.
That effect is definitely encouraging to continue the work, you mm-hmm. know, and you're sort of bolstering your self-esteem to continue making work of that caliber.
Right.
So appreciation and critical appreciation can be huge.
Mm-hmm.
However, this is something I'm trying to deal with in my own life, is not putting too much weight on what other people think about it.
That's a hard line to toe.
Oh,
yeah,
absolutely.
Because you got both. Because you have your creative peers that you want. Like, mm-hmm. in all seriousness, you want the attaboy from your creative peers.
Mm-hmm.
But then, you know, you got people who are your creative peers, or even just like, I think it's called the noisy 5 or noisy 10%, who's always going to hate, mm-hmm. just troll.
Yeah.
Jones whack.
Yeah.
You know, or even people who you really respect and you want their approval. Yeah. And either you don't exist to them, or the one thing they say to you is some sort of critique.
Sure.
It's hard.
Yeah, most definitely. And that, you know, that sort of inner circle of creative peers and people who you admire, that mm-hmm. is, that can be the most beneficial or the most devastating feedback.
Mm.
You know, if they say, way to go, good job, then you're on cloud 9 for, you know, a couple days.
Yeah.
And if they say, that sucks, you should try again.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, if they say that you should try again, I guess that's encouraging too. But if they say that sucks, then it's like, that hurts.
Right.
You know, but that, you know, again, that's something I'm trying to not put too much weight into other people's opinions. I'm trying to get to a point where if the work I'm producing is satisfactory to me, then I want that to be, you know, the biggest evaluator of my
mm-hmm.
work.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not there yet. I mean, the work that I'm doing, when I'm working on it, I like it. And then when I'm finished with a piece, I'm like, that could be better. Like,
yeah.
I'm not that psyched on it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. So I think in a way that's really good, because that continues to sort of push me
mm-hmm.
and become better at what I'm doing.
Right.
Yeah, that's the most important thing to me, is to be personally satisfied with the stuff I'm putting out.
There's so many questions I want to ask based off of the stuff that we're talking about right
Hit
now.
Hit me.
I gotta try to choose one. I think I'll just kind of throw something out there. One of the things that I would like to know is how do you create that line? Because it's one thing to say, hey man, you know, you just got to kind of figure out, you know, what's good, and you know, and you got to have this circle of influence and your creative peers and people who tell you what's good and what's not good, and then you also got to not listen to them. You know what I'm saying? Like, how do you like, is there a checklist that you go through to figure out when you should listen to people and when you shouldn't listen, who you should listen
sure,
to?
Because sure.
I'm just trying to think through myself. If mm-hmm. I was listening to this podcast,
mm-hmm.
I know I am very black and white.
Mm-hmm.
I am very literal.
Mm-hmm.
And I could see me listen to this and going, wait, you just said this.
Mm-hmm.
And then you just said this.
Yeah.
So what do I do? You know,
right.
Do I listen to people?
Oh yeah.
Or
yeah.
Do I not listen to people?
Well, I think that's the conundrum. You
right.
know, that's
therein
like the
lies the rub.
That's the problem, right? Like, who do you listen to? You have to listen to somebody,
mm-hmm.
right? So who is it going to be? And
yeah.
for me, it's myself, and it is other artists and creative people who I look up to and or respect.
Mm-hmm.
I guess that's almost the same thing. But, you know, I want the validation of the people, essentially my elders, right?
Right.
So, like, the artists whose work I like.
Right.
Those are the people whose approval I want. I want them to, like, give me the thumbs up.
Okay.
Yeah. And, yeah, I don't know.
How do you handle when you feel like you killed it?
Mm-hmm.
And when one of your influencers or one of your mentors or one of your mm-hmm. peers is like, no.
Mm-hmm.
You need to go in this direction. Because I think a lot of us have had that moment where you're just like, yo, I don't care what nobody say. This is gold. And then someone comes through and goes, maybe not even thrash it. They just kind of, you know what, because when someone thrashes it, it's almost easy to kind of like dismiss that.
Mm-hmm.
If it's someone gives you an actual light critique of mm-hmm. just like, why blue?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And you're like, because blue is banging. But
trust me. You want it to be blue.
Right, yeah, like, you know.
Yeah, at times, well, not, let me back up. That happens a lot, like the, and I wouldn't say so much from peers mm-hmm. or people who I admire, but more from clients. It's like, actually, like, lack of any feedback is almost worse to me than no feedback. Or, sorry, bad feedback.
Explain that a little bit more.
Well, say I send something off to somebody, and their reply is, I'm trying to figure out how to say this. Send a design off to somebody, and their reply is basically,
this is a
like,
client. This is someone who's hiring you some work.
Yeah.
Right.
So they're paying me. I'm giving them a design.
Mm-hmm.
Say it's like a sketch or the first draft on a logo or something.
Right.
If they reply, thanks for sending this. Can we see the next round in a couple days? That is worse than like, I don't like this at all. Can we backtrack and try?
Because they didn't really say anything.
They didn't say anything, which makes me feel like they don't like it, but they're afraid to tell me they don't like it.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, to sort of prevent that, I try and encourage people to tell me their honest opinions,
mm-hmm.
you know, when I'm doing commercial work. But it can be difficult to get that out of people, especially some people don't have the vocabulary to communicate in visual language.
Yes.
You know, that can be a really difficult thing. And I realize that, and mm-hmm. I, you know, I have to try and be patient with that. But yeah, that can be discouraging when you get no feedback instead of bad feedback.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've learned through working with graphic designers that it's absolutely positively important for me to go out of my way to be clear
mm-hmm.
about what I want, what I don't want, what I like, what I don't like, and give suggestions,
mm-hmm.
give references,
mm-hmm.
give direction.
Yes.
Like if I hit you up, Adam, say, yo, I need a pattern.
Mm-hmm. What do you want in the pattern?
Yeah. You know?
Yeah.
And I say something like, you know.
Right.
I don't know.
You gotta tell me.
Like Louis Vuitton. It's like,
right.
Okay. But even still, what about Louis Vuitton?
Yeah.
So what I would do a lot of times, and this is, you know, just something for you to maybe even consider if you're working with graphic designers, I found that they really appreciate this, being able to go, okay, here's some of the stuff that you have done
mm-hmm.
that I like.
Mm-hmm.
Like you actually look at that person's work and mm-hmm. go, you see how you did this mm-hmm. over here?
Yeah.
I like this.
Yeah.
And you see how this over here, this is not something you did, but this is something I found that I want. So can you possibly take this thing that you've done and do it this way
mm-hmm.
and ask them to give you a couple options to kind of give them some freedom to run free,
mm-hmm.
but also give them like boundaries to run free within?
Yeah, most definitely.
If you micromanage the designer, then it's going to be like, well, you do it.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Since you know so much, why don't you pick out your pen and get your computer and you design it? And it's another thing
sure.
if you just fall back and you're just like, you know, just do it. I trust you. And then mm-hmm. they make something and then you're like,
well, that's not at all what I expected.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. That's definitely, I mean, that's good advice. If anybody out there is working with a graphic designer or an illustrator, that feedback and guidance and guidelines are critical
mm-hmm.
for the creative process. Because you're right. When somebody goes, I want this design and I trust you, I want you to do your thing. Like that is infinite. I could do anything.
Yes.
And the odds of me doing something that's going to be like what you have in mind or that you're going to like are real slim if you give me no guidance, for sure. Yeah.
Yeah, there's a certain level to where even when you're hiring certain kind of artists, certain kind of graphic designers, some graphic designers will, their arrangement is, okay, I'm going to do what I want.
Mm-hmm.
And you're going to pay me for it.
Mm-hmm.
Period.
Yeah.
Like, that's what it is. Like, I'm not doing any revisions.
Right.
What do you want me to do? I'm going to interpret it how I want to interpret it, and you're going to give me half up front. If you don't like it, your half is gone,
You know what I'm saying? Or something.
Do some
like
people
that.
Work like that?
I've actually had a certain designer where
really?
I've sent them a concept and it's been like, here, done. And I was like, oh, okay.
I didn't know that.
I've only dealt with that one
like
time.
That.
Well, you know, I've learned
yeah, yeah.
like how to kind of almost discern and decipher yeah. and work through how I want to work with people because that doesn't work for me.
See, you probably have more experience with graphic designers than I do because as a self-taught illustrator, graphic designer, I don't really know a lot of them.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't go to school for it, so I don't have this like circle of people. I do, you know, I know plenty of artists. I know plenty of graphic designers, but none that, you know, are super tight to me that we talk about it.
Yeah.
It's very likely that I'm forgetting somebody right now and they're going to yell at me for not bringing them up.
All the thousands and thousands of listeners to the Beautiful
yeah.
Struggle podcast.
Yeah. Yeah, man.
Well,
crazy.
I want to get a little bit into your style.
Mm.
Your style
yeah.
is very unique.
Thanks.
And it's especially in a time period where there's a lot of lack of uniqueness,
mm-hmm.
you know? There's a lack of particular style in doing things. You listen to a lot of music, and a lot of music sounds the same.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you see a lot of movies, a lot mm-hmm. of tropes, a lot of TV shows being done over and over and over again.
Yeah.
You see a lot of artwork being done over and over and over again. I look at your stuff, and like I said, one of the main things about your stuff is, what's that? That's one of the first things that drew me to it. And I was like, it was almost, and I'm not meaning this in any kind of way to be disrespectful. It was odd. It was
That's
weird.
Cool.
It was almost a level of disturbing
mm-hmm.
that made me go, I had to squint my eyes and get closer to it to be like, what is that? Like, it wasn't like, oh, it demanded my attention because it was so odd and weird.
Cool.
And the way things were, the way you were doing things, like I said, it was kind of disturbing in a way, not disturbing where it's like, I'm like disturbed because it's disgusting or like
right.
skeeved out, but disturbing in a way that's kind of like, it's disruptive to my eyes and to my mind. I couldn't easily and quickly place it, understand it, process it, and move on.
It
drew me in to be able to go like, what is this dude doing? What's he saying? What does this even mean? You know?
Yeah, yeah.
So
that's great. I mean, I take that as a major compliment that it pulled you in and made you think about it.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that that factor is the most important factor of artwork in general.
Mm-hmm.
The ability to catch somebody's eye and make them either do a double take or come closer and consider it more. Whether they walk away with a positive opinion or a negative opinion is secondary to the initial contact with the work.
I like that you said that.
Yeah.
I like that you said that.
Yeah, man. I think getting people to interact with our work and getting people to think, basically, when they see an artwork is more important.
So provoking people to a deeper level of engagement
mm-hmm.
is of higher value than thumbs up or thumbs down to you.
Yeah, I agree. I agree with myself.
Yeah, you know, that's a good point you just made.
A good point, Adam.
No, but yeah, that's really profound in a way, you know, because I think there's even various levels of art. There's
mm-hmm.
there's all kinds of levels of art
mm-hmm.
where you see that.
Mm-hmm.
There's stuff that's odd, it's strange, it's weird, and you're just like, this doesn't fit.
Mm-hmm.
But what are you doing? You're talking about it. You're engaging with it. You're drawn to it.
Yeah.
Where there's a whole nother lane that's like, I don't want to disrupt. I don't want to be odd. I do want to fit. And that's okay too, because we
right.
need that, you know? But it seems like you're of a higher value to you is being able to go, like, I want you to engage with this.
Mm-hmm.
Not just kind of like, I'm not a stop sign for you to like, okay, message received, moving forward.
Because mm-hmm.
there's a place for that kind of design.
Sure. Yeah, yeah. And I'm, you know, I'm speaking more in terms of like my personal work or quote unquote fine artwork rather
yeah.
than graphic design. So I, you know, I do a lot of work just for myself, you know, at home, in my studio, drawing for no reason other than to pass the time and to have a good time. personally.
That's some of the weirdest stuff. And guys, when I say weird, I'm not saying weird in a disrespectful way. Like, I enjoy it. Because it's, like I said, because it's weird in a good way. It's odd in a good way. It's whenever I'm scrolling through Instagram and I see one of those, like, afternoon doodles, it's raining outside. I figured I'd sit here and draw some old weird person with their hands cut open and flowers coming out of it. And some old, like, what the heck?
Huh? That's a pretty good idea. I'll have to do that. I'll write it down. I'll make that piece.
Make a bear fruit shirt out of it.
Okay. Coming right up.
Right. Yeah, I got you.
Yeah. Man, you know, I love rainy studio days.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. And like yesterday, we had a snow day.
Yes.
You know, it snowed all day.
Yeah, it was.
And I worked in my studio all day, mm-hmm. and it was awesome. Those are like the best days when you don't have to go outside. You just sit there and do stuff.
And do you look at that as like work, or do you just look at that as like breathing? Like as an artist, you just kind of like...
Those like home studio sessions when I'm not producing work for hire, when I'm just making work for myself, that to me is just like, what else am I going to do?
Like people watch Netflix.
Yeah. And I watch TV too, but yeah, I mean, I spend a lot of time in my studio and I don't know actually what other people do like with their spare time. I spend it in my studio. Yeah. But, yeah. The style thing, I appreciate that you appreciate the style. Because it took me years to develop that, basically, to sort of work out my own visual vocabulary.
Mm.
I started out by...
Visual vocabulary, I like that.
Yeah. Wait, we should, like, write down all these really amazing words I keep saying.
It's going to get recorded. It'll be around until the T-1000s come and, you know, the internet takes over and, you know,
yeah,
Skynet explodes.
We are recording this, right? Wouldn't it stink if we weren't even recording to now?
We are recording because I'm looking at it. I'm telling you right now.
Good.
Because we can't do this again.
Good.
No, we can, but we're not going to because we're recording.
Good.
Visual vocabulary.
So the,
And I'm interrupting you.
Mm-hmm.
That's great because it is a visual vocabulary. Like I said, mm-hmm. remember I told you I was at work one day and there was just a magazine on the table.
Oh yeah.
And I just looked at it and I was like, that looks like Adam. Like I saw a picture. It's almost like I saw a picture of you.
Weird.
You know, yeah. Like that's the way my mind clicked
mm-hmm.
when I saw the artwork.
Mm-hmm.
And your name popped up in my head as though I had seen a picture of you.
That's
how it shifted because there was that distinct in my mind.
That's awesome. Yeah. But that, yeah, the style, right? So where was I going? When I started like teaching myself or teaching myself how to redraw or I was relearning how to draw,
right.
I was looking at a lot of different visual artists. And my style has basically become this accumulation of little nuggets that I picked up from all of my favorite artists along the way.
Mm-hmm.
Along the way, so mm-hmm. like if you're familiar with Juxtapose magazine at all, you probably know some of these people. Like I was looking at Jeremy Fish, Travis Millard, who's the dude from Texas? He's the art director, one of the art directors for Thrasher. He's an illustrator. I forget his name. Mike Giant is a huge influence. He's the dude that, you know, he does Rebel all 8. The art for Rebel 8.
Yeah.
All those guys, I was really drawn to like the more graphic, slightly cartoony illustration work.
Yeah.
And so I would pick out little details that I liked from all those guys' work and I would start like incorporating it into my work.
Mm-hmm.
And it's sort of become this evolved mashup of all their stuff. And I think I've got it to the point where nobody could say I'm like biting those guys.
Yeah.
You know, I think it's evolved to become its own unique thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm really happy with where it's at now, but I'm trying to keep pushing it, keep getting it to evolve, learn new things, learn new techniques. That, you know, that's the other thing is like the technique and technical processes are as important as the style, You know, because if you don't know your materials, you don't know your medium, and you can't produce good quality
work. Don't know your medium.
So, have you ever painted with watercolors?
When I was a young kid.
Okay. If I gave you a set of watercolors and a paper and some brushes and a water and a towel, could you make me a watercolor painting?
I could splash around on the paper, but I don't know if I'd be able to make anything of any value.
Yeah, I mean, I can't remember how I phrased it before, but mastery of your medium.
Yeah.
So you know...
The tools, understanding the tools of the trade.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. The more you use those tools, the better and more proficient you are with them. And, that craftsmanship of the artwork is as important to me as the concept and the visual style of it.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So how do you take inspiration
mm-hmm.
from other artists
mm-hmm.
and not bite other artists? Because I think we've all gone through, you know, a season of being able to see someone, like even down to like people wanting to like be like Michael Jordan,
mm-hmm.
like, you know, wanting to do things just like Jordan, but they're, you know, but then there's also some foolishness in being able in not taking the wisdom of your elders. So mm-hmm. how do you like glean wisdom from those who've come before you, but also still mm-hmm. be an individual and not steal from them?
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, I would say just practice is the biggest thing there. I mean, definitely when I was in the early stages of my illustration career, like I said, I was borrowing little details from those guys' work. And I would say in my early work, you could legitimately say I was biting.
And so there was a time period where
sure.
you were. Do you think that's necessary?
I wouldn't say it is absolutely necessary, but I think it is, it makes the process easier.
Mm-hmm.
If you can take that influence and apply it literally the first time,
yeah,
and then slowly work it and develop it into your own thing, then, you know, I think that's fine.
It's almost, it almost seems like to me is like, in a certain way, it's necessary, you know, it's mm-hmm. necessary because you see someone do something. And if you think about a baby, what does mm-hmm. a baby do when it learns something? It literally mimics
yeah.
what you say, you
yeah,
know,
yeah, yeah.
if you're like, shut up, the baby's like, yeah, you know what I mean?
Right.
It's copying you.
Mm-hmm.
Eventually, then it starts to get a grasp of the English
yeah.
language. It starts to get its own thoughts, its own ideas, its own ways of doing things. Start to figure out that works for me. This doesn't work for me. You know,
mm-hmm.
actually, this works better for me because of how I'm built and because of da, 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 da. But
yeah.
they've got to go through that season, that time, that chapter of straight mimicking. Like I have to mm-hmm. straight up mimic you.
Yeah.
And it's hard when you're posting everything on Instagram, you know what I mean? And you're posting every single thing that you do in a time period where we've kind of got an ungracious creative community that doesn't really give people a whole lot of like, you know, leeway to learn and grow and develop. Like
yeah.
people are looking for an opportunity to call you out on biting somebody.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And I have been called out in
yeah.
the past with my own work, and it sucks. Like, it does not feel good.
No.
And it was legitimate. I mean, you know, I have to say, I ripped something off. I will say in my defense that it was not completely intentional. It was a thing where it was, like, a little bit too close to the inspiration.
Right.
And I didn't really realize it because there was a period of time that had passed between first seeing the inspiration
yeah.
and then executing it.
Yeah.
And... you know, I was contacted by the original person and was like, hey, what's going on with this? This is like a little bit too close to my thing.
Yeah.
I was like, I'm really sorry. I'm going to change it. And that was it. You
right.
know, just like learn from that, move on. So now I'm much more careful about making sure I'm not biting or ripping somebody off.
Yeah.
Trying to put out stuff that's unique, original. And like you said, though, there is nothing new under the sun. I mean,
yeah.
everything is
yeah. I was
inspired
gonna say
by
that.
Something else.
It's hard. It's so hard because, like, there's a real part where you feel a certain level of, like, I think it's almost,
I'm kind of trying to toe the line here, but I'm not very good at toeing the line on things. It's kind of like a level of arrogance.
Yeah.
Like, I made this.
Yeah.
Did you?
Right.
You know, like, believe, create, inspire. Like, you were inspired by something.
Right.
That inspiration created a level of, like, belief or ownership within you. Mm-hmm. And the natural thing that happened is you created something. You mm-hmm. made something. You know mm-hmm. what I mean? And it's hard to, I think the thing is reading a level of intentions mm-hmm. into something and not giving people, not assuming positive intent and giving people the benefit of the doubt and having a conversation with someone and reaching out to them.
Yeah.
Like, and just saying, hey, I don't want to say that you did this.
Right.
But it sure enough seems like you did.
Yeah.
Like, it looks like you stole this from me.
Yeah.
And I want to be honest. I feel some type of way about that.
Right.
But I want to also recognize that I'm not the only person who's ever used a car in a design. Mm-hmm. You know, cars have four wheels. Your car's got four wheels. You know what I mean? Right. Like, it's weird. But at the same time, there are people who do steal. So mm-hmm. it's a weird thing to do when, like I said, we're in a time period where everyone's sharing everything.
Yeah.
You know, and you don't even recognize how these things are affecting you. We're all watching the same movies.
Yeah.
We're all watching the same TV shows, listening to the same music, liking the same pictures, mm-hmm. listening to the same podcasts. I mean, you find yourself even saying things that you've heard someone else say,
mm-hmm.
and you're saying it like it's the first time you heard it, like it came out of your brain, like you never right. heard it before.
Yeah.
You don't cite your sources, but I think that's because, like, maybe we're not taking the time to really, like, process through and look like I owe someone some level of like
sure.
I don't know.
Yeah, and it's also, I think, a sort of a product in the time that we're living in where everything is so rushed and like immediate, like I need it now, like
mm-hmm.
It's almost like society right now does not allow the artist to take the time to develop original ideas.
Huh.
And it may not be society's fault. It may be that the artist is imposing that rushed feeling on himself, to where you're inspired by something, you want to turn it around quickly, so you don't allow yourself adequate time to develop beyond the inspiration. And so you're basically regurgitating the inspiration, just
yeah.
in a slightly different form.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. That's why I want to move to the woods someday and get rid of my internet and get off Instagram.
I'm not ready for that.
Someday I'm going to do
it. Well, that's what you'll just be going back to your roots.
Yeah, man.
Going back to getting dirty again.
It's going to be great.
Yeah?
I'm going to live, I don't know, somewhere in the woods. I don't know where. On the East Coast.
The woods in the East Coast.
Yeah, but you won't be able to find me because I'm not on Instagram anymore after that.
Okay, so how are people going to get your artwork? Smoke signals?
I'll retire.
Turn street art. Then you'll become like a street artist.
Woods art.
Right, woods art.
I'll paste up on the trees and
there
stuff.
There it is. So then you'll just be running around putting up wheat paste, and then people will like, and I'll be like, and no one will know it's you. Mm-hmm. Nobody will know it's you except mm-hmm. me. Because then I'll come through and I'll see it and I'll be like, Adam? And I'm like, how did you know who this guy is? Like,
I'm going to be the Banksy of the Appalachian Mountains.
There it is.
You heard it here first.
Hieroglyphics.
Look out for it in the 2040s. Adam Smith.
Yeah, we have to do more art together.
That's cool. Let's do it.
I have to get you. I have some half-baked ideas in my mind right now that I'm not going to say on air because I don't want anybody to mistakenly take them and say, I was inspired by the podcast.
Yeah.
And I did that exact same idea you just said.
Yeah. You know, I have been on the other side of it. I've seen work from younger kids who the work is like questionably close to my stuff.
Yeah.
And unless they're selling it, I don't really care.
Mm.
Like, I sort of take it as a compliment. Like,
mm-hmm.
well, this kid likes my stuff enough that he's going to try and copy it. Like,
right.
That's cool. Maybe he'll take it and develop it into something new, and that will be like his thing. Like,
yeah.
That's awesome.
Because inspiration is... No, excuse me. Let me back up. What's the saying? It's like imitation
is the highest form of flattery
or something
yeah.
like that. And it's hard. It's hard to feel like I'm flattered by your theft.
Mm-hmm.
I'm so flattered by your straight biting and ripping and thieving yeah.
the thing that I work so hard on.
Yeah.
But I mean, I think if you're able to kind of like step back in a level of humility, I think there's a point where you're like, I've been there too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, I've been that place where I've been so inspired. Like, I mean, one of the first things that I did is I used to take comic books and I would put trace paper on top of them and trace them.
Right.
Like trace right over them, like redraw. And then I would take the comic book and then I would lay it there in class and I'll close my textbooks over top of it and I'd have my like notepad.
Uh-huh.
And then I would be opening the textbook and drawing the exact same thing.
Wow.
Like I wasn't coming up with my own idea.
Right.
The first thing I did, I was so moved by X-Force and Cable and Batman that I just wanted to draw X-Force and Cable and Batman and Wolverine and everything else.
Yeah. And you know? I think that's awesome at that age to be doing that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you're of that age and you are literally just copying comic books or copying whatever you get your hands on, I think that is extremely critical stage in like development of an artist, because I think at that point in your life you don't really have the like catalog of life experiences to develop legitimately genuine ideas and concepts, and so by copying existing artwork, whether it's comic books or whatever, then you're sort of just developing like the motor skills and the technical capability to get that made.
Right.
Right. Because art to me is twofold. It's the technical capacity of physically accomplishing a piece of artwork, but it's also the mental capacity of developing an idea and then developing it to the point where you can create a physical manifestation of that idea.
Mm-hmm.
And I think kids of a young age don't have that mental capacity to develop ideas.
So it's almost like flexing there, or like basically it's like some general, you know, artistic preparedness.
Yeah.
Just getting their basic, you know, motor skills.
It's artistic exercise.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm just thinking through like there's just the whole idea of assuming positive intent, because, you know, when you think about it, it's like, the first thing I did was copy.
Mm-hmm.
The first thing I did was copy someone else. I took something that I was inspired by. And I think that there's loads of people right now who've become amazing artists and amazing creatives that started out copying, started out straight ripping other people's stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
And if you were to kick the door down of that seat of that initial moment of Mike Giant,
right?
You know, and we're not saying Mike Giant did this, this is just, the, you know, making an analogy. Mm-hmm. Kick the door down when Mike Giant is ripping somebody off, you know, and he's in his studio and he's literally copying something else someone saw. I'm not saying he did it. I'm just saying then Mike Giant might not have been able to develop and blossom and bloom into who he is right now for Adam
to look at Mike
Giant for a season of time.
Yeah.
And now blossom and develop and turn into who he is now for someone to rip you.
Yeah.
And hopefully that person will be inspired by what you've done to, you know, blossom and develop and turn into whatever they're going to be. And that process can continue to happen moving forward. So maybe we've got to be a little more gracious and give people that time.
For sure. And also if you are in the position to be able to influence, you know, a younger person.
Yeah.
You know, whether you're a musician, visual artist, you know, a computer code writer, whatever. If there are younger people who admire what you do and who are interested in what you do, I think you have an obligation to sort of support them and feed them little nuggets of knowledge and experience. And it's only fair, because at some point in your life, you were given little nuggets of knowledge and information that an older person has acquired from life experience. And I think that's how generally as a human race, we, you know, evolve and progress as a civilization.
Yeah. And that's what I'm hoping the Beautiful Struggle podcast is, honestly.
Yeah.
It's conversations that I've had on the phone, working with different artists, different studios, different basements, different, you know, pizza shops.
Mm-hmm.
All this inspiration and all this growth that I've learned from other people, I'm hoping that these conversations, you know, people will listen to them and they'll be like, oh, wow, you know, that helped me. Mm-hmm. That inspired me. That influenced me. That had some sort of effect that, like, I could relate. I heard something I never heard before. It pointed me in a different direction, or it encouraged me to keep going in the direction I was going.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I'm hoping that these conversations and this conversation helps people, you know, now and years down the road, or if Skynet comes and shuts it all down.
What's Skynet?
You don't know what Skynet is?
Is that from Terminator?
From Terminator. You know what Skynet is.
I only guessed that because you referenced Terminator earlier, but I haven't seen that since I was little.
Okay. Well,
sorry.
I'll give you a pass. It's all right.
Maybe I'll watch it tonight. And Jiro Dreams of Sushi.
Jiro Dreams of Sushi is definitely, you know, worth your time. It's good.
Sweet.
So we're doing a lot of talking about inspiration, doing a lot of talk about inspiring the next generation or whatever. Mm-hmm. And with Bear Fruit, our slogan is believe, create, inspire. Take what you believe, create something, and inspire your circle of influence. And the last question that I ask all the people who come on the podcast is, when it's all said and done and you leave a legacy behind, what do you want to inspire people to do? Where do you want to push them when they've seen your body of work and they look at your life? What kind of inspiration do you want to leave them with?
Good grief.
That's the one.
Dang, doggy.
I think it's a good question.
That is a good question. And that, you know, that is a tough one to put me on the spot, put people on the spot with. But what's my legacy? What do I want my legacy to be?
Well, I mean, you know, you think about, like, when someone's currently doing what they're doing, you know, when Michael Jordan is playing basketball, when Michael Jackson is alive, and, you know, just even, like, you think about family members that you may have lost. When they're around, it's kind of like, they're there. But when they're gone, you kind of reflect on, like, what did they leave me with? How did this affect me? They left me with, that's what they left me with.
Sorry, Mom.
So, yeah, you know, I'm just kind of saying, like, not even, I mean, maybe not when it's all over, like maybe the why behind what you want to do. How do you want to, you know, or do you have one? Or is it kind of like, this is for me?
I think I'm still working it out.
I think that's fair. That's okay.
And, you know, I think something that I've considered is, like, starting to write more because of this reason of, like, you know, when I have thoughts on life in general, they sort of, like, come into my head, and then they leave just as quickly. Like, I'll think about it. I'm like, wow, that's a really great thought. Like, I should remember that.
Yeah.
You know, I'll put that on my tombstone. But then I forget it.
Right.
So it's like, now I need to start, like, writing more. Yeah.
Right.
So I have, like, I want to have, like, a little memoir when I die. But to answer your question generally, I think I would want to be remembered as a guy who worked honestly and just did what he liked to do. A guy who loved his wife. Shout out, Hallie. What's up? I'll be home soon. You know, not much more than that. Haters gonna hate. I try not to think on it too much. And, you know, keep doing your thing.
Haters gonna hate.
That's right.
Play on, player.
That's chapter two.
Keep doing your thing.
Chapter three.
There it is.
Adam Smith memoir.
There it is. You should now write that down.
Okay.
Because that's gonna be the name of your memoir.
I love
it. Haters gonna hate. Play on, player. Keep doing your thing.
I won't write it down because it's recorded on
there. There it is. And it is recording because I'm looking at it.
Excellent.
All right. So that wraps up episode number four. Why don't you tell the people where they can find you on the internet?
You can find me on the internet on Instagram at Dear Adam Smith. That's D-E-A-R, just like if you were writing a letter to me. that's Instagram and Twitter. I'm not on Twitter too much, but I'm on Instagram a pretty good amount. Mm-hmm. My personal website is DearAdamSmith.com, and our company's website is ScoutsHonorMedia.com. Also, our social media handle for Scouts Honor is at ScoutsHonorMC on Instagram and Twitter. And social media and internet stuff is cool, but if you ever want to come by for a studio visit, please do. Also, if you are a young person and you have questions about being an artist, I'm happy to answer those. You can email me directly at sincerelyadam@gmail.com.
Very generous, man. Very generous of you. That's what's up.
No problem.
Sure. I hope you guys do take advantage of the opportunity of an artist actually saying, hey, I'm making myself available to build a relationship with you. I mean, I know I've talked to some people and said, hey, you need to try to get some creative peers and get around some people who are better than you. And this guy's pretty good. So I definitely take advantage of the opportunity to reach out to him through whatever form that you may choose. So if you want to follow me on Twitter and Instagram, at DOC underscore OCK underscore BF. Mm-hmm. Also follow Bearfruit at B3ARFRUIT.com. Hit up our website, bearfruit.com. And if you like this podcast, leave us a 5-star rating and a positive comment on iTunes.
If you don't like it, you can leave a 1-star rating and a negative comment.
You could, but don't do that.
It's a free country, man. People do whatever they want.
Listen, if you want to leave a 1-star rating, you are totally within your rights.
If you didn't like the podcast, you can come meet me and Ock in the alley in downtown Philly later tonight.
If you want to.
We'll talk about it.
And we'll have a conversation. Right. We'll discuss with our knuckles.
Yeah.
All right. So next time, guys. Peace.
Bye.